All right, today we're talking about trauma bond relationships. And if that doesn't sound familiar to you at all, welcome to the club.
Right.
Jess came prepared and she's going to school us today. And also, you're probably going to see yourself in some relationship you have in this episode. So just take it with a little grain of salt.
Yeah.
It's
a very heavy topic. We buzz through it as quickly as we can and share the high notes. And I think it's something that we'll probably revisit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we do that often is like, here's a topic we're going to throw at you and then we'll come back because it's a lot and it's heavy.
Yeah.
All right. So before we get started, here's the review of the week. This is from Miss Morgan Massey. She says, Jess and Mary are great at holding space for the entire conversation. There's no need to gloss over the hard things, but it's also good to be able to laugh, even in the midst of more difficult topics such as diet culture, gray area drinking, or alcoholism. Thank you for reminding us all that it is not terrible. That was a dramatic pause.
That was good, though.
Thank you.
Thanks, Morgan.
All right. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to Not Terrible with your hosts, Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Jess is a part-time vegan yogi. You can find her on her motorcycle, usually heading to therapy. Mary is a writer and Jesus follower. She loves camping almost as much as cheeseburgers. The Not Terrible podcast is two childhood friends who have been through the ringer, learned some tough lessons, and kept going. Jess and Mary share stories, advice, and lessons on each episode. They try to find humor in the chaos and learn from their mistakes in an attempt to feel less alone as they navigate life's journey.
I was talking to my brother the other day, and he and I are very opposite in that I've been in two monogamous relationships. I really shouldn't say monogamous.
Tell me more. What do you mean by that?
That's not even the definition of monogamy, but
let me check the calendar. Oh, it's opposite day. Okay, cool. I'll be right back.
I've been in two relationships. Just said a lot of truths right there.
Oh, shit. We're going to edit that out.
I probably shouldn't. As much as else as I've shared, I should share my biggest.
Oops.
Yep. Yeah, that's putting it lightly. But yeah, my adult life has been two serious relationships.
Two long-term relationships.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mostly overlapping. And
I didn't know I was prepared for this level of honesty.
I wasn't either. Until I said,
so nervous I have to toot.
Until I said two simultaneously monogamous relationships, which is not a thing. And my brother has always been a serial monogamist.
Meaning
like one. About 18 months, he's like, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore.
Okay.
But he loves to fall in love. He loves to be in love. He loves all the warm and fuzzies.
All the starts of love.
That come with that first year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But then the wheels kind of start to fall off around that 18-month mark. And he's like, all right, well, who's next?
What's next?
Yeah, come on down. And I realized that we are the same but different. Like I haven't had that pattern, that time pattern. But he recreates relationships in hopes of eventually being the one, And I've recreated and stayed in the same two relationships in hopes that they would have, one of them would eventually be the one.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me curious. Like, I know he went about it a little differently, obviously, but something happened in our childhood that made us go, okay, we're just constantly going to be searching, or we want to find that happy ending. And I don't think that's uncommon. I think that's for a lot of people. But instead of actually doing the work with one person and going, hey, this is going to get hard and we're going to work through it and these things are going to happen, it made me start questioning, like, what happened in our childhood that made us not want to do the work or made us want to, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Like it's think just, that it has to be perfect or it's not worth anything.
Or it's not worth anything. You must not be the person, so I'm just going to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then we were on the internet, and I think I posted a story on Instagram about it because I was so moved, and it just hit me hard, was the trauma bond relationships. And it's basically when you have a developmental or childhood trauma, which we've talked about big T, little t, a big T being abuse, neglect, living in a home with domestic violence, death, loss of someone important to you, or then you have, and those are the big ones, that like that's a childhood trauma and that's going to affect you and you need to treat it immediately, obviously. But then it talks about other, like small T childhood traumas that affect us just as much in relationship in our adult lives, which is not being seen or heard by a parent, a parent trying to mold or shape you into what they think you should be, mostly based on their own unhealed trauma.
Mm-hmm.
A parent that lives vicariously through their child. You're told that your certain emotions are weak or unimportant. There's a lack of boundaries between the parent and the child. When I saw this one, it said a parent denies a child's reality, and it made me wonder if they just thought the kid was a liar or a fibber, or if you shared like a big T trauma and a parent didn't believe you, that would be, you know, no respect for your reality. Focuses heavily on appearances, being used as an emotional support, and just having a mentally unwell parent, period, that either isn't medicated or isn't doing anything to treat their mental illness. And I basically went check, 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 check on all these little T's. And we've done that test before. What is the test that you take? I know I messed up. We're almost recreating this exact same conversation because we couldn't remember what it was the last time. But there is a test that you take, and it basically says these are things that are going to affect your adulthood if you witness them, you know, in childhood. And it's the big T stuff. And I think I got like an 8 out of 10 on that quiz, and it was no good.
Yeah, ace.
The ace test. Yeah. So if I aced the ace test, and then see what I did there, and then I probably have about 70% of these small T traumas that we talked about. How that affects your identity formation, which is basically the development of your personality, and that's lifelong. But obviously that big time frame is childhood when you are developing your personality. But when you have a developmental or a childhood trauma that disrupts your brain, and your brain kind of develops these coping mechanisms of like, how do I stay safe? I need to be quiet. I need to be helpful. I need to go away. Your brain starts as a kid going, what's the path of least resistance here? Like, what am I going to do? Yeah, to stay safe.
Right.
I mean,
that's our human response. Like,
yes, first response.
Yeah, yeah. To stay, keep ourselves safe.
Yeah. So when you create this, and we've talked about this, this creates completely new pathways in your brain that would not have been there regularly if you would have been in a secure, safe,
healthy environment,
enriching environment.
Right. Because a normal like 9-year-old shouldn't have to worry about their own safety.
Right. 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 So in your brain, instead of those things, you start questioning my safety, my worth, my purpose, and how all of those things actually depend on other people's reaction to your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So as an adult,
uh-oh,
what starts to happen, you disassociate from yourself completely. And that's where alcoholism, drug addiction, eating disorders, depression, difficulty in personal and professional relationships, and even overall, like, physical health problems. Like, you're more likely to have that, too. So take that, all of this thing, this giant, there's a meme and it makes me laugh every time I see it. And it's a guy and he has a JanSport backpack on. And it's like a guy in the city. And the JanSport backpack is literally as big as him. It's as big as him and it's huge. And the arrow is pointing towards him and it said, all women. And then pointing towards the backpack, it said, men who don't want to pay for therapy. And I was like, that's exactly it. All of those things that I said about those coping mechanisms, basically it's like, oh, okay, you just created the most codependent person on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk into a relationship with just thinking that codependency is a healthy way to love someone.
Right, with really, really skewed version of how relationships work.
Right, and go into adulthood thinking that codependency is a healthy way to love someone, because I've, like, it sounds weird, but like any addiction or issue that I've had, I can talk you through codependency and make it sound like it's a really, really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can you lose?
Mm-hmm.
You just want to love someone because obviously they can't love themselves, and it's completely dependent on you loving them and making sure they know their worth and their value based on your opinion of them.
Right.
No.
And what a lot of the problem is we, when we grow up, we don't... So, like, if you grow up in a house where your parents are hoarders, you don't, for a long time, realize that other people don't live like that.
Right.
So
yeah.
You, what you're growing up in, you think is normal. And it's not until you get older and you start seeing how other people do things or how other people live or how other people clean their houses that you realize, like, you start to, as you get older and more self-aware, you start to see that your normal, and I would say this in quotation marks if you could see me, doesn't match up with what the majority of other people say it is normal. And so that's when we start, like, if we're self-aware and like hoping to grow, that's when you start doing some work. But for most of us, we just pick up what we think is normal in childhood and we just stick to it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. So those codependent people, when you're a codependent person, there are certain personality types that gravitate towards you, such as narcissists, abusers, people who are emotionally unavailable. And clearly that's from their own childhood trauma too. You just aren't born any of those things.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
The bad news is, like, if you're coming into a relationship codependent and you're coming into a relationship with a narcissist, neither one of you are healthy to see the unhealth in the other. Like, you don't know why you're drawn to each other.
Right.
And or why it feels to work right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because unhealthy people don't recognize, like, you have to be healthy to know that those are warning signs.
Yes.
Otherwise, it looks like
the relationship you grew up
fireworks
with.
And this is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a lot of times, so those types of relationships, those pairings, there are intense. There's a bunch of things, but I'm gonna share a couple. Intense jealousy, rage, and distrust. Overstepping, whether it's sexual, verbal, or physical. A push and pull cycle, which is my favorite thing to do. Come here, get close. No, stay away.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to let you close, but you're going to stay at arm's length, because if you get too close, you're going to see how the sausage is made and you're going to see that I'm batshit crazy.
Right.
But then I need you to go away and
to
I need
miss
to
miss me.
Yeah, to miss me. And I need to miss you. And I need to think that there's a chance that you're going to leave me. And then I have to show you how wonderful I am so that you'll take me back.
Like, high alert emergency situation all the time.
All the time. Yes. Promises of changed behavior, financial abuse. And financial abuse isn't just like someone controlling your money and only giving you so much. It's also like running up credit card debt, having expenses that your spouse isn't aware about. The grand gestures. This is a part of the push-pull cycle for me to make up. You get a fancy dinner. You get to go on a trip. You get an expensive gift.
Christmas comes and you get tons of amazing gifts,
but
you're shitty to me the rest of the year.
there's an emotional addiction to one another. Like, I think that's a part of it, the highs and lows. most often your friends and your family see how unhealthy their relationship is. I remember talking to Lisa one time, and I said, well, this is, you know, this is where it is. And she said, yeah, the relationship is toxic. And I said, I know, but I mean, I'm toxic in the relationship too. It's not just him. And she goes, oh, I know you are. I wasn't excusing you. And I was like, oh, okay. I thought we were just here to blame him. I didn't know we were talking about me right now. Yeah. That thing of always wanting to change each other. And I think that's a severe codependent thing is like, oh, I see the best in you and I just want you to be the best that you can be. And instead of just, you know, you're both unhealthy.
You getting ready to rationalize that?
I sure was. And then this is my favorite, like, just imagine this colorful shaker of sprinkles, and it's just all manipulation, and you just sprinkle the manipulation all over it. Yeah. And most often, a relationship that cycles through all of these different feelings and incidents, I mean, comes with, you just feel like you're stuck. Mm-hmm. You're stuck here. Because on some level you think that's all you're worthy of.
Right. And your brain, just like an addiction, any addiction, you're kind of addicted to that drama.
Drama and the cycle.
And you don't, your brain automatically goes back to that. Mm-hmm. And to stop it, it's actually like painful and uncomfortable. So why would you stop doing that?
Yeah.
I understand this pain. I can live in it.
This comes all in cycles. I've ever known. Yeah. Yeah. This is all I've ever known. And if it's going to be, and this was one of my favorite codependent phrases to use. And I caught myself saying it the other day and never realized that it was as negative as it was. When you fight hard, you love hard. Like you can't do one without the other. And I was like, what did I just say? So you have to hate each other intensely in order to love each other? What? But I had always said that and realized that's such a load of crap to just be awful to each other because you're like, I know, but after we're awful to each other, we're going to love each other so
right.
much.
Like that rationalization that, no, we're so in love that everything is intense.
Yes.
Our fighting and our making up. What? Maybe you're crazy. Maybe that's what it is.
I think it's more that. But that you think you have to have the crazy to get to...
the really good, authentic...
the less crazy is what it really is.
Yeah.
But it is. But you think that, oh, well, we just have to do this to get to the good parts. Yeah, it's nuts. But you do feel stuck. And I think it goes back to that, too, of whatever happened in your childhood. Like, I'm not worthy of anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And you start taking, like... and this was another thing that Lisa said. She said, you, like, respect and physical touch, like, not even sex, but, like, respect and physical touch and, like basic human needs in a relationship you think are grand gestures. Like, you think that's baseline
basic
stuff
level.
You should get. Yes. And I was just like, oh, my gosh. Like, you... You
got so little of what would be healthy, normal, that when you see a little something, you're
you latch onto it and you're just like, oh,
romance.
But, yeah, exactly.
As opposed to like treating another human compassionately.
Yeah. That's all it was. Oh my gosh. But then when you get stuck, obviously in these situations, the next feeling is shame, shame. But with that shame, but you're always hopeful. And I'm not saying hopeful like in a good way.
Yeah.
It's
like
it's,
in a delusional way a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, I was gonna say like in an idiotic way. Like you're so dumb that you're dumb with hope. And not in a sweet way, like just in a like you're just stupid. You're just so dumb.
Like in a naive yeah.
like mentally, there's like emotionally stunted way.
Right, like I'm going to keep doing the same thing over and over again, but I think this time it's going to be different.
And that is the definition of insanity.
Yes.
Honestly, it is.
But if we often talk out loud about, like, one of the benefits that I think our relationship is, we sometimes are sharing things and then kind of hearing what we're saying to each other and realizing, like, oh, well, let me process that again because it sounded good in my head, but
right.
when I say it out loud, that doesn't actually sound very healthy. Or, like, oh, I didn't make the, like, when we think about something versus speaking it, it's different parts of our brain, too. So, like, we're engaging on a different level so that we, that's why it's so good, like, not just therapy, but, like, having a friend that you can not have, like, a filter or not be afraid of anything that you're going to say so that you can then, a lot of times, just work it out by, if you say it out loud, you can kind of see the holes a little bit more.
Yeah, and because this just happened, I had a moment before Mary got to the office, and I had expectations of someone, and my expectations were just, they just blew up in my face, basically. just
didn't
big,
go well.
Big boom. And I cried and I screamed, and I was like, what? Why am I still feeling all this pain? Like, can't this be over? Can you please just make this stop? I'm done. Scream crying. Poor neighbor Marvin. I don't know what he heard.
Marvin knocks on the door.
Yeah. Hey, are you okay in here?
Brings over his little therapy dog.
No, I think he just goes in the bathroom and flushes the toilet. So I remember that, like, hey, I'm over here. I can hear you, and
it
freak.
It makes our toilet kind of flush, too. So then you're like, okay, fine, I'll get it together. Because
exactly.
I'm not sure which bathroom you're in right now.
But I was having that moment where I was like, nothing's going to fix this. I'm going to feel this way forever. And this is awful. And then Mary got here, and I just did what I do. And I'm like, take a deep breath and say as much as I can before we have to start recording. And I had a crappy day with my dad on Sunday, and I realized that our relationship is really unhealthy.
Who's our?
Me and my dad.
Okay.
My dad and I don't have a really healthy relationship, but we've always been really good at making people think that we're really close. When we would be out in public as kids and stuff, people were just like, oh, okay, you know, you and your dad and your brother, you guys are tight, and it's the three of you. And, yes, in proximity, we are close. We live in the same house. We go places together. We're always together. But in terms of, like, conversation,
like, intimacy or
intimacy
emotional,
and emotions and stuff,
yeah.
That was zero. Mm-hmm. That was zero. But everybody thought that, and it felt like it looked good for people to think that, and they said nice things, and it was just like, oh, all right, well, let's just keep up the facade.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to brag or anything, but I'm closing in on 30 days without a drink, and that will make you reevaluate some big relationships in your life.
Like,
and
your brain is just starting to, yeah. like, not be foggy.
Right.
So you're seeing things with new
I didn't even
eyes.
Realize it until Mary goes, well, when is the last time, like, you did a relationship with your parents sober? And I was like, oh, shit, I'm sober. That's why this is so hard.
I forgot.
That's why I'm feeling all these feelings. Wow. And I was like, oh, well, I actually probably should dive into that a little bit and reconsider and have different boundaries and just know, like, this isn't the day to be hanging out or having these conversations. But I realized my dad hurt my feelings. I feel like I had let him down. I felt like he was disappointed in me. Just a number of things that were said on Sunday. And my immediate, like, after he left, I screamed at my brother and said, oh, no, this is why. And my brother was like, oh, yeah, that sucks. Oh, thanks, buddy. And but then I realized that I wanted to reach out to a man and feel loved. And that was, so if you could squish down like a 6-hour time frame on Sunday afternoon and me going, okay, who can I reach out to and feel loved and safe and secure? That's my entire life in a 6-hour time period.
That cycle.
And just, yeah, and I didn't realize it till I was telling Mary this entire story and going, oh my gosh, this is what I've done. My dad created this childhood for me in which I was cared for. I was safe. I was financially nurtured, financially secure. Mm-hmm. Never had to want for anything. But a lot of like you said, emotional, real love. That was just omitted. It wasn't important. I mean, taught me work ethic, like everything else. And so I was filling that void in adult relationships with men and going, hey, how can I serve you?
So I feel worth.
Mm-hmm. worth. What can I bring to your life? Because with my dad and my mom, both my parents, they knew early that I was the firstborn. I nurtured.
You were dependable.
And I was dependable, mm-hmm. and I helped them raise their children. And my worth was in helping other people. So then when I disappoint somebody, I'm like, okay, who can I go to and do something for them? You know, be it a favor or a gift or take them to dinner or have sex with them, mm-hmm. and feel like I'm going to receive love in return.
So like this, ugh, I hate this stupid term, but like your daddy issues brought
and when people say daddy issues, people are
it
just
makes
like,
me
oh.
roll my
yeah,
eyes.
It is, but it's a real thing.
We're all living in daddy or mommy wounds. Like that's
right.
part of the human experience.
Right. Yeah, it is. And it's not daddy. Like you said, it's not daddy issues. It's like it's the trauma and the wounds that mm-hmm. it's the generational stuff, too. Mm-hmm.
Right, because he's loving you the way he was taught to love, which mm-hmm. is lacking in some areas. So you know from a way back that he didn't get what he needed either.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I hope no one in my family listens to this. Whoops.
I don't think anyone, either you one of our families listens to
no,
our podcast.
No, I really don't think so.
I don't either.
I don't think so. But you know what? It's,
screw them.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I don't mean that mean. But I'm not saying anything that's not true. I'm not saying anything that it. This isn't slander. This is my personal experience that I'm sharing with you guys, and going. Oh my gosh, I'm 38 years old. Like being like real talk. This is midlife.
Oh.
Sorry, Mary.
Stop with that.
I'll be 38 Saturday, and this is midlife, you know? And that's, I mean, if I make it around 80, I'll be happy. That works for me. That's good. I like fried chicken and red meat, so 80 be good.
Okay. This went off on a side. I wasn't prepared for this.
No, but I've
death
just...
death talk.
I didn't mean it like that, but I've just yes. been journaling and talking a lot and just like... And I read somewhere, and this isn't the first time I've said this, but I read it again in different terms... Everything that we did living life, the first half of our life, basically you need to drop it. You
yeah.
need to heal it. You need to move through it. You need to do whatever you do and decide how you're going to live the second half of your life. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm doing.
Right.
I thought I was treating all this stuff for about the last 2 or 3 years, but I was just treating it with alcohol and pills. And now I realize that it's like,
it didn't work. You tried it and
didn't
get better.
Didn't work. And I've seen too close what happens when you live the second half of your life that
way
too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think kind of what you said about like, I hope my family doesn't listen to this. There's also an aspect of like, your story isn't unique. We have all grew up with some wound, like our parents had wounds. They tried their best, but they gave us some of their wounds and we're carrying them on. And mm-hmm. we are living out of those broken pieces. Mm-hmm. And that's not a Jesse family story. And that's not a Mary or Chris family story. That's like a human story experience. So I think while it might hurt when we acknowledge that our family is doing that, like when we say, mm-hmm. but here's the way your wound has set me up to fail, and here's how I'm trying to really hard to counteract that.
Yeah, and to not do that to my kids.
Yeah.
And I know
and
that
becomes personal because then it sounds like, mm-hmm. oh, what I did wasn't good enough for you.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because I know, and this is, and I know that something is going to surface with my children.
Mm-hmm.
I know that their father and I have royally messed up in multiple areas.
I'm shaking my head, but not because of you, but because like
this is just going to happen.
This is what we do to our kids. Yeah.
And something is going to surface later on in life, and I'm going to go, oh, gosh. That's in direct correlation to something
his dad and I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how having an open, honest relationship with my kids and being able to go to them and say, hey, I think you're struggling here, and I think I know why, mm-hmm. and we need to have this conversation. If you have questions for Dad and I, we're an open book.
Yeah.
We're not and perfect. Let's we figure don't out how think them, we are.
Yeah.
And we don't want you give you that perception or even like try to hide and sweep under the rug that our relationship has been hard and bruised and damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that none of that rolled over onto you
is
asinine.
Yeah. We're not like that naive and dumb.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe where our generation is doing things differently, because I think for so many of our parents' generation, it is dangerous and insulting and disrespectful mm-hmm. to say, hey, I've got some stuff that didn't go as well as I would have liked to in my childhood, and I'm going to have to heal some wounds.
Right. But I think that that's because they come from a generation where you zip it up and you deal with it.
Like right.
There's some kind of respect or pride that comes with keeping your business to yourself.
Yeah. Well, in your home, everything is falling apart.
Right.
And I think for us, we saw how everything fell apart mm-hmm. so hard and fast and messy. Mm-hmm. And we said, maybe this isn't the right way. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should do something different.
Mm-hmm. We went hard and fast in this episode. That was a lot of stuff, but I feel a lot better afterwards.
Is this the most you've ever prepared for an episode? That was a lot of notes.
That was a lot of notes. But there's just, I feel like this is this could
iceberg.
Be a season.
Tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, this is a lot. So I didn't want to forget anything.
Yeah.
But this is probably
I'm very
most,
proud of you.
This
I mean,
is a front and back piece of paper,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, I noticed. When you flipped it over, it's like, oh, what are we doing now?
actually, it's just, it's a, I don't,
it's a,
I don't know.
It's a nude sketch of my cat.
It's a... I did a caricature of you, and
this is my grocery list for later.
Exactly. Eggs.
Gouda.
Yeah, this is. I think that this. I'm living this right now, I've lived it up until now, and I'm acknowledging that this is the cycle. That I've been in relationship. With, I mean, like, this is how I do relationships, is mm-hmm. just like this,
mm-hmm.
just like this. And so it was just, it's something that's very topical. And so I was ready.
And I think that's a good time to just remind everyone that that's what we do. Like, a lot of times we have something fresh and new and we bring it up and we talk about it and we don't have like answers and a nice and tidy ending where we say like, well, here's how you make this better in your life. Like, this is just another like, mm-hmm. throw it out there. Here's where we're at right now.
Yeah. And I think that that's important to say is that the healing from this is the rest of your life too.
Yes.
It's every day. It's something. It's checking in. It's all the things that people say that you need to do to heal. But like I said, some days my healing is sitting here and talking to Mary while she
awkwardly eats some soup and gets all over my face. I was wiping with a kitchen towel after every bite.
You would have thought it was
and we were like
meal.
Making eye contact, and I was like, she's not even going to acknowledge this soup everywhere.
Nope. I'm telling you some stuff, Mary. I don't have time to tell you about your white chili all over.
And I ate two servings because I brought some for you. And then you're like, I ate dinner. I was like, okay, I'll just eat all of this. It's a lot.
She's wandering around. She's like, that was a really bad idea. It's
just
idea.
A lot
my
of beans.
Poor Chris.
Oh my gosh, that went off the rail.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Connect with the podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Visit them at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for their newsletter to receive bonus episodes and podcast extras. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider. Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and Off the Air Podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studio, this has been a Waco production.